Broadway Bank, in partnership with the San Antonio Food Bank, have started their Summer Snacks for Kids campaign, providing children in low-income households with nutritious food that they lose access to during the summer. All donations go directly toward buying nutritious snacks for kids in need. Details are at broadway.bank/snacks.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Across the United States, prisons are judged by how securely they hold people. But advocates for reform argue that they should also be judged by how well they prepare people to return home at the end of their sentence. That matters because roughly 90% of the people incarcerated in the U.S. will eventually be released. And what happens behind bars, whether people experience violence, isolation, and trauma, or education, job training, and a sense of dignity, can shape what happens when they do rejoin their families and communities. A new report from the Brenham Center for Justice looks at prison programs in red and blue states that are trying to make incarceration more humane and more focused on rehabilitation. So what would it take to make American prisons more humane, and would that also make communities safer? Joining us is Lauren Brooke Eisen, Senior Director of the Brenham Centers for Justice Program, a justice program, and author of Inside Private Prisons and American Dilemma. And Lauren, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me today.
Yeah, it's great to have you. I'd start off by talking about how making prisons more humane or less inhumane, how would that make us all safer?
So there is a quiet revolution in corrections taking place all over the country right now that's focused on improving prison conditions for staff and incarcerated people. And these reforms often reduce violence in these places, and that will ultimately benefit public safety in our communities. And this revolution is happening in a geographically and politically diverse set of states, and it's truly a story that's just not getting enough attention.
So you start off by with this fact, 95% of incarcerated people will eventually be released. Why is that the starting point for this conversation?
Because most people don't know what it's like inside our more than 1,600 state and federal prisons. And unless you work in the system, have a loved one who is incarcerated or has been incarcerated, or you yourself have experience with prisons and jails, most people in the country don't really think about prisons. They don't think about jails, and they don't know that most of the people who are incarcerated today will be rejoining their communities. So it's really critical to focus on the conditions inside these facilities, not just for human dignity reasons, but also because a lot of these critical reforms really do reduce violence and connect people with jobs post-incarceration, which means better safety for everyone involved. And it means, that these reforms really will improve post-release outcomes.
And when you're talking about prisons and making them more humane, are you also including like the supermax prisons?
The reforms that we highlight in this report run the gamut across the country, across different types of prison systems. Most of what we have observed are not in supermax prisons, but a lot of the work that is happening certainly translates to those types of facilities. And specifically, a lot of the work that we detail and describe in this report that we just released a couple of months ago does highlight the work that's being done in restrictive housing areas in prisons. And the goal there is to reduce violence in those wings of prisons, and is very translatable across the country. no matter what the security level is of the prison facility.
Our number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. So it does seem like our culture, our general attitude about prisons in the United States is that we want people who are convicted of serious crimes to suffer. That is what people are thinking about. I want you to go to jail and I want you to suffer while you are there. Is that starting point wrong?
I think it is wrong. And the Brennan Center recently commissioned a poll that found that more than 80% of likely voters think that formerly incarcerated people deserve a second chance and can be prepared to reenter society through rehabilitative, educational, or vocational programs. And this report truly includes green shoots of possibility for how many correctional leaders, staff, and advocates can and have already started to roll up their sleeves to improve conditions of confinement that reduce violence in prison and enhance rehabilitation. And something that's really, really important about this work is that many of the prison reform innovations that we detail in this report increase corrections retention and staff satisfaction. Increased corrections, staff satisfaction and retention, while also improving post-release outcomes for the incarcerated individuals. And the stakes are really, really high. The 95% number that you mentioned at the beginning of this show translates into more than 400,000 people who are leaving prison every single year. And about two-thirds are rearrested within 3 years, and nearly 60% of people leaving our prisons are unemployed 1 year after release.
And so your report highlights programs in both red and blue states. So mm-hmm. What does that tell us about the politics of prison reform right now?
So our justice system has largely failed those who are incarcerated and are often in inhumane prisons and jails. It has failed their families who see their loved ones return to their communities without housing, without jobs, without access to basic civil rights like voting. And it has failed those who work in our jails and prisons who often suffer truly untenable working conditions and often experience violence and trauma themselves in their roles. And these broken systems harm everyone. The incarcerated people who endure isolating and often inhumane conditions, while correctional officers face unsafe workplaces, burnout, and chronic staffing shortages. And that's why we really were driven to look for innovations that are happening across the country. In blue states, in red states, in rural areas, in more urban areas. And what it tells you is that there are a number of programs that have started to center the humanity of those who live and work in prison. And many of those programs have already been evaluated and can prove that they reduce violence in these facilities, that they are successful at training incarcerated individuals for positions, for jobs that they can easily walk into once they're released from prison. And you know, the programs and the work that we highlight in this report really show us that U.S. prisons can adopt these proven approaches, and that prison reform works.
Let's go to a caller, Stephanie. Stephanie, you're on the air.
Hi. I was hoping to ask if there's any planning in the reform for a change to the policy where criminals that have done their time, they've completed their probation appropriately, and with the exception of sex offenders, that would be different. But why would they have to mark felony on job applications if they've already completed everything that they need to do? And then that hinders them moving forward, and next thing you know, they're back in prison. So is that something that is being looked into as a change?
All right, Stephanie, thank you for your question. Talking about banning the box, as people call it. And so, Lauren?
It's an excellent question, and about 13 states have passed what's called clean slate legislation, which is legislation that requires limited access to the public, to employers, of someone's misdemeanor and felony convictions. Dependent on the state, there might be, you know, a waiting period where one has to be free of their misdemeanor or felony record for a certain period of time. But I live in New York State, and New York State recently passed its version of clean slate legislation. A number of states have done this, and the Brennan Center supports that legislation and urges, honestly, every state in the country to support some sort of record clearing legislation. So we are seeing a lot of momentum around that. And you're absolutely right. You know, when one has served their sentence, when one has served their time to society, we in this country do not often give second chances to individuals who have a criminal record, who have spent time in prison, and it is absolutely critical that we start to pass this legislation in the states that haven't done so.
Okay, we're taking a break here. We're having a conversation about what can be done to make U.S. prisons more humane. We're speaking with Lauren Brooke Eisen, the senior director at the Brennan Centers for Justice program and author of Inside Private Prisons, an American Dilemma. You can call in with your questions and comments about making prisons more humane, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after a quick break.
Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Many people have the impulse, particularly if they're the victim of a crime, they want the perpetrator convicted, and then put them in prison and throw away the key. But unfortunately, or fortunately, I mean, that doesn't way things work. We're talking about a person. You can't hold them indefinitely in prison for a crime frequently unless they've done something really heinous. They eventually have to come out and rejoin society. But are we going to put them into an institution that's really going to take that person and really break them and make them worse? Are we going to figure out a way to help them heal and become a better person and reformed and educated and be able to come back in society and do good, take care of themselves, their family, and the community? And that's where we got to make some tough decisions and talk about what's happening at our prisons. They're rough places. Can we do things to make them more humane? What are some low-hanging fruits that could achieve that? We're talking about that this afternoon. Lauren Brooke Eisen is with us, the senior director of the Brennan Center's Justice Program. You can call in with your questions and comments, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Monty on the phones. And Monty, you're on the air.
Yeah, I just wanted to, you're talking about whether they have to check the box of being a felon history or not when they apply for jobs. But that's a private company. I think they may or may not be required to say whether they have to or don't have to make those boxes checked when they hire jobs. So I don't know if that's true or not. I was just wondering, because that might be why they're putting the boxes there. It's because they're a private company. They can do that if they want to.
All right, Monty, thank you for that. So, Lauren, these are private companies. Don't they have a right to know about the individuals that they're thinking about hiring? And they should be able to ask them if they have been convicted of a felony?
So clean slate legislation looks different in different states, and depending on the crime that was committed and whether you're talking about state legislation or federal legislation, you know, the answer to your question will look different. But I think the broader point here is that when people have been sentenced or, you know, have a criminal record, the United States is an outlier in the sense that we, as a country, have thousands upon thousands of so-called collateral consequences. People with a felony record sometimes can't vote, sometimes can't get access to public housing, sometimes will be released from prison without an ID, you know, and won't be able to show that they can receive some of these benefits. And the goal with a lot of this legislation, a lot of this reform, is to provide second chance opportunities. And this report that we just published really highlights a lot of work that is happening inside facilities. These are partnerships with the governor's offices, with the departments of corrections across the country, with private businesses. We highlight work happening in the state of Michigan. They have a program called Vocational Village that has been replicated in multiple prisons across the state, which is a pretty remarkable program that provides training and skill building, such as working on heavy machinery. And in Michigan, the State Department of Corrections has a partnership with the Secretary of State's office. And if people complete certain programs through Vocational Village, they receive a certificate from the Secretary of State's office so that they can actually go into one of these jobs or careers post-release. And the numbers are pretty incredible. So in 2019, Michigan's Vocational Village graduates had a lower recidivism rate compared to all people released from Michigan facilities. It was about 15%, which is pretty low across the country, where you see recidivism rates of 40, 50, 60, sometimes 70% in some states.
So I want to ask you about what are some of the easier things, low-hanging fruit that we can do to make prisons more humane. But I want to start off by asking about solitary confinement. We know from reporting that it is overused in many of our prisons here in Texas included, and that has extreme psychological harm connected to it. How does solitary confinement fit into your focus?
So we partnered with an organization called Amend. They're based at the UCSF School of Medicine in California, and their organization draws on international correctional models and public health practices to reduce harm and promote the health and humanity of prison staff and people who are incarcerated. And they conduct a lot of work in prisons with staff and incarcerated people who are in restrictive housing or solitary confinement. And some of their work has been evaluated. And after they introduced some of these trainings, specifically a group of specially trained staff working with high needs people who engage in high risk behavior in one high security behavior health unit in Oregon, it resulted in a 74% decrease in assaults. So that's pretty significant. And a lot of their work focuses on trying to work with staff and incarcerated people to reduce the size of their restrictive housing population and move those people back to the general population. And that's really critical, important work, because a lot of people don't know that you can be released directly from restrictive housing to the community. And the work that Amend does with states across the country is really important, because if they can reduce the use of restrictive housing, if they can reduce the number of incarcerated people who are in restrictive housing and move those people to the general population, they will be much better suited to reintegrate into their communities once they're released.
Let's go to Jay on the phones. And Jay, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yeah, no. So, I actually went through the Texas prison system some time ago. We all make mistakes in life. And, I will say that a lot of it has a lot of, successful reentry into the community, at least from my experience. I was a professional in legal field prior to and still am, right? So I deal with these issues both. I've dealt with them on a personal level and a professional level. And, with that said, I can say that, at least in my experience, one of the biggest barriers to successful reentry into society is more so on the local level. I had a terrible experience when I came out. I was placed on community supervision, which, to the best of my understanding, is, you know, designed to help people reintegrate into, or at least that's what they say, to help reintegrate into society successfully. You know, unfortunately, the very first community supervisory officer that I had when I came out, you know, one of the things she did was she sat down with me and she said, "Why are you here?" Right? And she continued to question me. I said, "Well, you know, I've made some mistakes and, you know, I'm really trying to know, why are you here? Why are you here?" She kept going on, "Why are you here?" She said, "The reason you're here is because you're a criminal. You're a criminal, and we're going to do everything possible to make sure that you suffer the consequences of your actions and that you never forget that and that you never do this again." Right? So, I mean, I understand that, you know, the entire thing is to make it an unpleasant experience, you know, so that way you don't want to go back. But there are several things from, again, the lack of AC when I was checked in was, in the middle of June. I remember laying in pools of sweat, not moving while I was in check-in at Garza West. The filth that is in there, the staff infections. There were two for-profit facilities that I was transferred to throughout my time. And one of them, I can tell you, was specifically run by the inmates in that, at night when it came time, you know, it was the gangs that were in charge. The officers would come back in after, you know, and they'd turn the lights back on. There were all sorts of illicit activities happening, and that facility was very close to the border, right? So there are a lot of things in there that, you know, I think the for-profit prison system, you've got guards in there that are not properly trained. Right. It's again, a lot of it has to do with these community supervisory officers that are bringing these people back in. I was brought back in on the shock probation program, so I did not go through the parole program. Right. So, you've got things there. But I could talk forever. Right. I said, and I've dealt with this, you know, on both a personal level and professional level. So, there's a lot of reforms that need to be made. And I think they were correct in renaming it from, you know, the Texas, from the, what was it? It was the Texas Department of Corrections before. And now, you know, they've got to call it Texas Department of Criminal Justice, right? There are reasons for that. And you know, all of that, you know, should be taken to heart. And the problem is that we're winding up putting people out on the streets that are just going to come back in because there is profit to be made. And, yeah, you know, it's easier to hurt people like cattle than it is to actually reform them.
Jay, thank you for your call. I appreciate it. We're short on time, Lauren, but if I can get your reaction.
Yes, I'm sorry that you had some of those experiences. And, you know, culture change work takes time. And a lot of what we're highlighting in this report is culture change, not necessarily a legislation, which is key to making reforms, or litigation, which is also key. You know, this traditional punitive model of supervision is tough to overcome because the training that staff receive all across the country, in Texas and in almost every other state, has been designed to perpetuate this approach, this sort of command and control model. Also, correctional leaders typically serve for about 3 years. So the initiatives that they spearhead, if they are trying to reform their systems, will face uphill battles in long-term implementation when new leaders come in with a different set of priorities. So this work is truly long-term work.
Right, but we need a vision.
Can succeed.
But we need a vision. We need a goal. Prisons that are more humane. Lauren Brooke Eisen is the Senior Director of the Brenham Center's Justice Program. Thank you for coming on the board, the air today, and talking to us.
Thank you.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thank you for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation. Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to helping Texas communities and emphasizing safety. More at texasmutual.com/texansgetit.